Welcome, welcome, world, to another episode of the Act, Protect, Engage Academy podcast, okay, known as the APE Academy. We are happy for you to join us on this journey through history, all right? We have been on the subject of slavery as a main cause to the Civil War, and we've been discussing the intricacy of the slave trade in America, specifically the expansion and protection of slavery in the lead up to the Civil War. So thank you for joining us. I am Chase H. I'm your host. I'm a historian of 19th century American history, specifically the Civil War and Reconstruction eras, but I also study slavery in general and race and labor. So thank you for joining us. Okay, all right. Got a few quick housekeeping notes, as usual. Please remember, like, subscribe to our podcast, right? Because if you do that, then you'll get notifications when new episodes are streaming. So when you're sitting around at night and you're watching the NBA and you hear bing, you look down, you see on your phone there's a banner that says new episode of the APE Academy podcast streaming now. You are well aware of every episode as soon as it comes out. So that's very important. Also, if you can review, all right, or rate us, we look at all the reviews and all the ratings so we can figure out how to get better, how to give the information that we want to share, to give it to the world more effectively and efficiently. So thank you so much for doing that. Also, we have a few social media accounts. IG, we have an account entitled APE Academy Podcast. On TikTok, we have an account called APE Academy Pod, all right? Or I think it's APE Academy. APE Academy. And we also are going to have a YouTube channel with visuals coming soon, all right? That's in the works. So those are the two main accounts, all right? So that's where you can find updates, find extra kind of bonus content, material, some subjects that I don't have time to touch on the podcast. Sometimes I'll make a short TikTok video about it or a post about it. Okay, so that's important to know. All right, so quick recap. Last episode, we were talking about the expansion of slavery into the territories purchased by Thomas Jefferson from Napoleon of France in 1803. All right, the Louisiana Purchase, the expansion of slavery into those Western territories was huge on the lead up to the Civil War. Now, obviously, this is almost six decades before the Civil War, right? Well, 5 decades before the Civil War begins. But you can kind of see the building blocks are beginning to kind of set in place, all right, toward conflict, all right? Check it out. It's a great episode. But today we're going to talk about kind of a darker, darker subject, the slave breeding industry in America, okay? More specifically, what is called the Second Middle Passage or the domestic internal slave trade, okay? So the reason why I want to talk about this is because last episode I talked about the abolishment or the outlawing of the transatlantic slave trade in America, which began in 1808, and the importance of that, okay? I touched on slave breeding. Some of the states of the Upper South began it's a callous word and a callous phrase to use, but breed enslaved people in order to sell them specifically, right? Their worth was in their bodies. Their worth was in their ability to be sold and then transported, mostly by foot, into the Lower South, we're talking Alabama, Georgia, or out westward toward Missouri, okay? So this was kind of the motivation behind the internal slave trade was money. It was purely financial. Slavery had become a very, very lucrative business. This buying and selling of human beings. I'm not talking about plantation life where, you know, you have the master. A lot of the times we're taught in school, we have this image of slavery in America as kind of the quiet, serene, big, beautiful plantation with the docile slaves and the overseer and the big house, etc., right? And that is one image of slavery. But the other image is just brutality and cold capitalism of moving humans, chaining them together in large coffles. We'll talk about the concept of the coffle later, and moving them hundreds of miles, marching them by foot, and seeing just a mass of humanity moving around America chained together. That's a different image that we don't often get in popular media, film, or even in school. All right, so we're gonna start off part one with the second passage, okay? And we have a few sources. I wanna always give my sources, because that is very important. We have three sources. We have an article entitled "What Was the Second Middle Passage?" by scholar Henry Louis Gates, who is a professor at Harvard. We have a great book, which I just did a quick review on TikTok. It's called "The American Slave Coast: A History of the Slave Breeding Industry" by Ned and Constant Sublette. And third, last but not least, we have a book entitled "Soul by Soul: Life Inside the Antebellum Slave Market" by Walter Johnson. Okay, three great pieces or sources of information, two great books. You know, I don't expect everyone listening to read all the books and read every page, but if you can just download a sample of these two books on Amazon, Kindle, and just read through the introduction in a few chapters, you can get the idea of how much information is in these books, okay? I have a quick quote from the author of The American Slave Coast. Quote, "The birth, breeding, raising of children born into slavery was as much of an industry and a productive industry economically as the products their labor created." So it's important to remember the real value of slavery in America was not necessarily in the products that the enslaved people created, right? The staple crops, what they picked, what they produced, what they planted, etc., harvested, etc. It was in their bodies, their actual bodies, right? It was in themselves. Their worth is what fueled the slave trade, the buying and selling of humans, okay? So let's start. All right, the second middle passage. "Thanks to the transatlantic slave trade database, which is edited by historians David Etless and David Richardson, we know for a fact, right, that 388,000 Africans were transported directly to the United States. This process is, and it should be taught to our young students, our young scholars, as the middle passage. But the second middle passage, the domestic slave trade, is often left out of most survey courses." So these survey courses, which teach sometimes even 300 students in one class, they don't have time, a lot of the times, and they shouldn't make time, honestly, to discuss the dynamics of the internal or domestic slave trade. They do learn about the transatlantic slave trade, which is also very important as well. "According to historian Walter Johnson, approximately 1 million enslaved people were transported from the Upper South." So we're talking Maryland, Virginia, Delaware, Kentucky, etc. "To the Lower South," so that's Alabama, Georgia. So most, over two-thirds of them, were through this internal trade. So at the time of leading up to the abolishment of the transatlantic slave trade, the enslaved population of North America had been self-reproducing for over 50 years, okay? So slavery was not going to vanish organically, right? Just kind of evaporate like many of the founders secretly hoped. And the founders actually, when they came together to create the Constitution, okay, slavery was never really mentioned. And I think some scholars have debated about this and theorized about this, and many believe that the founders, including Thomas Jefferson, kind of believed that slavery would die out on its own, okay? And this was based falsely, right, on the high mortality rates and high death rates of enslaved people in other areas of the world, specifically in the European colonies, in the Caribbean, in South America, etc. So these slavery in these regions was almost 100% fatal for enslaved people. If you were a slave that were transported to the Caribbean or specifically South America in Brazil, that was a death sentence. Those areas, those regions produced sugar cane, which is notoriously backbreaking, notoriously dangerous, and killed almost everyone who was kind of condemned to slavery there. All right, so that's what the founders were basing their ideas of slavery on, was look, it will vanish on its own because of high mortality and low birth rates. Okay, but even before the official end of the trade, slave coffles were a common sight on roads from the Chesapeake region, whose soil was exhausted from 100 years of tobacco planting, to the Carolinas, Kentucky, and Tennessee. The trade didn't have an official name or structure as of yet. Sales were made at dusty crossings and roadhouses through informal rural networks of traders and speculators. I can't pronounce the word royal. Ooh, it's hard to say. Let's talk about slave coffles. So I just mentioned that slave coffles were a common sight around the time of the abolishment of the international slave trade, okay? Coffles is, according to the Oxford Dictionary, a coffle is a train of men or beasts fashioned together. Okay, and it comes from an Arabic word that means caravan. And the importance of this term is that the Arabs really created the term. The Arabs created the idea of the coffle. They had established an overland slave trade across sub-Saharan Africa to the Islamic world centuries before Europeans, specifically Columbus, crossed the Atlantic. So coffles were used to traffic Africans from their point of capture, which is, you know, their hometown, their home village, their home region, to their point of sale. It was a way of transporting enslaved people. By the turn of the 19th century, the slave trade was dictated by an insatiable demand for cotton. Okay, as I mentioned in the last podcast, the Louisiana Purchase and the final defeat of Southern Native tribes opened up new regions of the South for cotton cultivation and subsequently chattel slavery. Okay, so that's a lot to take in. But basically, what I'm saying is that at the turn of the 18th century, a few things happened all at once. Cotton became a huge international staple, okay? And this was kind of led by the creation of the cotton gin by Eli Whitney in 1793. This allowed cotton to be harvested much more efficiently and much faster, okay? So this really blew up the cotton trade, which in turn fueled the internal slave trade. Okay, also at the same time occurring, the Native American tribes who occupied these, you know, very fertile regions where cotton could be grown were defeated militarily and forced off their land. So what did that do? That opened vast tracts of land to European advancement, to Anglo-American advancement. Okay, slaveholders called these rich lands a kingdom for cotton. The number of slaves needed in the new states of Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana increased by an average of 27.5% each decade. Okay, so once these lands were acquired, once the natives were defeated, and this is in the early decades of the 19th century, so we're talking the 1800s, okay? During this time, of the 3.2 million slaves working in the 15 states in 1850, 1.8 million worked, harvested, planted cotton. Cotton is king. Between 1820 and 1860, proceeds, aka profits, from selling slaves was equivalent in value to 15% of the region's staple crop economy. Slaves that were transported or sold south represented $500 million in property. That is staggering. The trade made many people rich, and it put money in the pockets of thousands of people who had to house, clothe, feed, or provide basic medical care, very, very basic, to enslaved people who were being transported from regions in the Upper South into these new fertile regions in the Lower South. Many slaves were insured in transit and were covered by life insurance policies, which enriched a whole industry of speculators, insurance agents, brokers, middlemen, etc. Walter Johnson writes that the trade grew, and even though most of the trade remained rural, a pattern of intercity commerce emerged. Intercity commerce is trade between large urban centers, so large cities. All right, so this trade kind of blossomed around the same time. Intercity commerce, now the trade between urban centers, were dominated by these huge firms, these really well-organized, well-funded brokerage firms, slave firms that brokered deals and also transported human beings from certain ports to slave markets, okay? Slaves were gathered in places like St. Louis, Baltimore, and Nashville, and they were sent south. They were sent either overland in chains or by ships around the coast or down the Mississippi, all right? This internal trade was extremely lucrative, okay? And I have to stress this. I cannot stress this enough. When we talk about the Civil War, and we hear people saying that slavery did not cause the Civil War, we have to remember how vital enslaved people were to the financial stability of the country, okay? Specifically the South. If slavery was threatened, the very livelihood of thousands of people, millions of people in the South was put in jeopardy, would be put in jeopardy. So protecting slavery became vital. If you abolish slavery, you pretty much are abolishing the South's way of generating wealth for themselves, right? The South's economy, essentially, would collapse. So this is why one of the reasons why slavery was such a divisive, polarizing issue in the lead up to the Civil War, okay? So this episode was meant to be a brief view into how slavery became such an economically powerful institution, why the expansion and protection of slavery was essential to the South's interest, and it will lead into our next episode, which is going to be entitled Bleeding Kansas, 1854 to 1859. That was just one kind of huge fire hose burst of gush of information. Go read through the books that I mentioned. You can listen to the podcast over again to kind of take it all in. But please don't forget to follow, subscribe, rate, and review us. Follow us on social media. And remember, season 3 episodes are coming out now. They're coming out weekly, okay? So I'm going to have 2 episodes coming out weekly at least. Thank you for joining us. We hope you had a great experience learning. Once again, this is an amazing subject, and I'm so happy to share what I've learned with you. God bless y'all. Stay safe. Ape out.